If I can't trust what I say, mm-hmm. I'll get away with it for a while, and I may make a lot of money. But there are going to be people who don't like you at all, who hate you, and every time your name comes up, they're going to spit.
Yeah. Hey, this is Coach Michael Burt. Welcome to an edition of Person of Expansion. You guys know many years ago I wrote a book called Person of Interest. It became one of my most popular books. And this was back before social media, Instagram. And even today, the book has become more popular many years later. It's really how you get into the business of transformation and how you become a transformational figure. And I'm like, what's the next iteration of that? And the next iteration of that is Person of Expansion. And so for Person of Expansion, I'm coming to you live from the Greatness Factory Studios here in Nashville, and I'm going to interview interesting people. People of interest are interesting. They're fascinating people. They do fascinating things. And the gentleman I have today, I have known, I was trying to think, Scott Rouse, how many years that you and I have known each other?
It's been a long time, because you were still doing a radio thing back then. Yes, remember? Yes. You were doing that. And then at one point, you can't, because we talked back, because to set up the scene, I was at the Entrepreneur Center. I was the entrepreneur in residence.
Yes.
There. And then Michael Burgeon, who was the CEO, said, there's a guy coming in, Coach Burt. You got to meet him. He's got some ideas, and I think you should be the one to talk to him about it. I said, great. That's what we'll do. And I met with you, and you had all these you were telling me about these things going on, but then you said, not at this meeting, but it was something else. You were telling me about the radio thing, and we talked about that for a while. We worked through some other things you were talking about, thinking about doing. I think it was 2 years later.
Yeah.
He came in and said, I've got this idea I want to talk to you about. So it was a phone call. I said, so let's meet up. I said, okay. So we met. And he said, all right, here's what I got. Now, the personality type like yours, you can create a picture in someone else's mind, which is, that's tough to do.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people can do it, but you can do it. Not very many people can do it, but you can do it perfectly. So you were telling me about this thing, and you didn't tell me what it was going to be called until the end. And you told me about all these things going, it sounded kind of like WeWorks, but it sounded like so many other things put together. And then you said, and I'm going to call it the Greatness Factory. And then you just waited. And my job at the Entrepreneur Center is not to say, this sounds great, you should do it, because you're going to spend a lot of money on that.
Yes.
So I said, hey, man, hang on a second. You got to think this through. So I did. I said, okay. But, you know, so we walked through the stuff, and I said, I really think you got to be careful. You said, no, I see it. And I said, okay, I get what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, but because I'm dealing with people who get, you know,
yes.
I've got a battery that can fly by itself. It's like, oh, geez, dude.
Yeah.
But so you kept, as you kept expanding this picture, and it kept getting bigger and it kept getting clearer for me, by the end of that conversation, I was like, I think you can probably do it. I got to tell you to be careful, but have at it. I think I'm with you. I think it'll work. And so now here we are.
We're here. We're in the Greatness Factor. We're in the Level 10 studio. But I was remembering that date because you're a multifaceted gentleman. This is what I've always been fascinated by you. You got these skill sets. You got a primary skill, which I want to get into. Most people of interest that expand have a real core skill.
Okay.
But you've taken that skill into multiple dimensions, right? Okay. You're here today speaking to my exchange group, which is my high net worth group. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about what you think your primary skill is.
Human behavior.
Okay.
Understanding it.
Okay. And go back and unpack that.
I have a fascination with what someone's going to do next.
Mm.
From while we're talking, me and you, I'm watching your hand, seeing when you're going to move your hand. All those things, I'm trying to figure out what you're going to do next. I know you fairly well, so it's not going to be hard for me to guess those.
Right.
Or to predict what I think is going to happen. But that's my fascination. So when I'm talking to somebody who's done something they shouldn't have.
Yes.
Be it whatever it is. Then I'm fascinated by people who think they can hide stuff from you.
Yes.
You know, because when you're talking to someone, it doesn't take very long to be able to tell where they've been, what they've done,
right.
What they've been through, what kind of experiences you're dealing with.
Yep.
And in a 2 to 5 minute conversation, you can tell a whole lot. So that's, and I think my skill set is in that, understanding what you're seeing. So when I put myself in a position of asking someone a question, I can tell what kind of answer I'm getting back from them. And then knowing what questions to answer next, to ask next, to get even a bigger picture of what's happening, whether they're being honest or not.
Yeah, I'm laughing because the first time you and I went, Nate, I went back and told my wife. I said, "Man, I was a little nervous because I didn't know if he was," you know, because you're really, people would consider you a body language expert.
Yeah.
In some ways, but that's kind of low level compared to what you really are.
Yeah.
I mean, you're really a person that has this very special skill set. I've never heard you say it like that. because that's such a cool skill. Where, how many different ways do you distribute that skill? Like, tell everybody all the things that you do with that skill. Maybe the interesting things. There's probably some interesting things you do, and it's like, okay, this is what I do with that skill.
Okay. Well, I started studying this when I was 6 or 7 years old.
Okay.
6 or 7 years old. And by study, I mean my father was a doctor, and he would explain to me the behaviors of people, what they were going to do, how you could tell if they were sick, what they would do. So from then, I just started watching those things when I was a child. So being able to take that into, I went to Berklee College of Music.
Yeah.
You know, and studied drums and guitar, then became a record producer from doing that. And spent 32 years in that. While at the same time, in parallel with that, I was learning about interrogation and how you talk someone out of hurting someone else, or someone out of hurting themselves, jumping off something, whatever it's going to be, as I went through college. And those skills now I can take into when I'm in an interrogation situation. That's my my wheelhouse there. And the personality type would be the psychopath. That's the one I get the calls for the most, the one they think has done something. So that's where I use that the most. But in the music business, I could use it as well, because I could communicate with the labels and see what if they were telling us was true about what they were going to do with one of the acts we were dealing with, or deal with the people I was producing the record with, the band, the act, the singer, whatever. And I could tell how they were feeling about things and what their take was on it. Did they believe this was going to happen? Did they believe the record company was going to do what they said they were going to do? Is the record company going to do what they say they're going to do? While at the same time, learning to train other people to look for those things too. So it sort of fell over into the law enforcement part. Because I had some friends who were in law enforcement when I lived in Boston. They were going, you have an academy you go to and you learn. And they lived in my building. And I was like, here's what you need to know about that. Mm-hmm. As they were going through, you know, learn how to be police officers or FBI agents, which everybody, you know, a lot of people have gone on to be. And I would be telling the things I thought were going to happen from studying the scientific part of that, from the neurological side. Mm-hmm. And it was, we never thought about that. Well, will you please come and talk? In other words, you should come talk to our teachers and see if we can get you to tell us about it. No, I was 19, 20 years old.
Wow.
Long hair, two earrings, guitar player, talking to cops at the police academy about, here's what you need to know. And they're all like, oh, here we go. But when I started telling them about it, and they realized that I wasn't talking like an idiot or somebody sat around, you know, doing drugs or something all the time, because I was in the music business. I was into it like you are for the business.
Right.
Like, you're into business for business. You're not like for all the stuff that comes with it.
Right.
You're into it for the business part of it.
Right.
That's why I was into it.
Yeah.
So once they realized that, they would listen, understanding what I was talking about was actually coming from scientific studies. So that's the way I use that, or have used it my entire life.
So was there ever a time that you said, I have this skill? You know, most you know, unique abilities are detected early in life. You said you kind of figured out yours early in life. Me too, was 6 and 7 years old. I knew I was going to be a coach, or at least that was what people were telling me. Was there a time in your life that you said, I need to package this skill and go market this skill? Or was it, did much of the things you've been asked to do, whether work in this area, because you're doing everything from, you've coached people who were pitching big deals to raise capital, right? That's always, I've never gone down the path of raising a lot of capital, but that's probably where I'm going at some point. Mm-hmm. You've coached people in that.
Yep.
You've coached, I always thought our conversations were, you know, I always felt safe talking to you at number one, and I always felt like you gave me good counsel.
Oh, right? Thank you. Thanks.
Because you had all these unique experiences. I'm like, this is dude's smart dude. And you gave me some advice once about investing in something I didn't, and I would have made a fortune if I did. I think I did. Oh, no. I don't know if you remember that.
What was it?
It was back before Bitcoin. It was Ethereum. It was
probably Ethereum.
Ethereum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because all the studies up to that, but like I said, I come from the scientific part. All the studies said don't. So I talked to all the people I knew were in finance and said, I don't know about this. And still, they say the same thing, although it's made a gajillion dollars, you know, people who got in early. But yeah, so
you called me aside one day at a meeting, and you said, man, I think you should think about investing in this. And that was foreign to me. I was like, what's he talking about? But you know, you knew what you were talking about.
Yeah.
So was there ever a time in your life that you said, man, I got this skill set. It is a unique skill set based on your unique past, that you said, I need to package it and take it to the market? Or did that happen just because you were skilled and people kept asking you, come do this, come do this. Because I think about things and I find my skill, I package it, I market it, I monetize it. That's the way my brain thinks.
Yeah.
Is that the way it happened for you?
Well, mine, for me, everything was going great because I would just get pulled into training. When I learned how to train law enforcement in the military, it was easy. I said, I can do that. And you start getting the calls for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go all over the world and do that and train. I just got back from Switzerland doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to – I guess it started in 2017. I called another interrogator, my business partner now, Greg Hartley.
Mm-hmm.
He was an Army interrogator, ran a thing called the SEER School, if anybody knows what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you train interrogators, or you train the SEALs, the special ops, all these people, when they get captured, and they're being interrogated, not to talk. You teach them how to be tortured, basically,
yep.
and not say anything.
Wow.
So from that, he and I got together and we're talking, so we should probably do an online course in 17, I think, 16 or 17. Might have been 14. Of course, we didn't get around to do it. Couldn't have enough time to do it, I think, till 17. So we put out this thing called Body Language Tactics. And we sold, and you and I have talked about it, we sold a lot of those.
Yeah.
And then when COVID hit, we sold a whole lot of those. So it became, and it is today, even the number one online body language training course.
Yeah.
BodyLanguageTactics.com. So, and it's not expensive because we want everybody to understand what's happening.
Yeah.
We approach it from... not just, here's how you interrogate. That's not the approach we take. We take the approach of how do humans work? What works in their brain? What fires off neurologically to make you do specific things? And it's so we made it interesting so it wasn't boring. And there was another one we did. After we did that so well, we did one called the True Crime Workshop because we started this. I had an idea for a YouTube channel. I said, what we ought to do is, Greg, we ought to get some buddies together. And since everybody's locked in, let's do that video. I think it was his suggestion to do the Tiger King. So we'll do a video and we'll just break it down what we see from a body language perspective and put it online and see what happens. Well, we did that and it got like 1 million views. Like, holy smokes, we should do another one. So by the second episode, I think we turned it into the behavior panel.
Mm.
So it was me, Chase Hughes, Greg Hartley, and Mark Bowden, four of us. And so every Tuesday during COVID, we get on and we just talk about a video. And then I don't know how to edit video. So it looks like a South Park episode from the editing perspective. But because it's real, it's still clunky. But I'd put those together and we put them up. And now we've got almost 1 million followers at this point. During all that, I get a call. And it's Dr. Phil.
Hmm.
He said, I want you to come out and be on my show. I said, okay, great. I'll come out. What are we going to talk about? And there was a case that was happening near Knoxville. A little girl was missing. And he said, will you come talk to us about that? I said, yeah, that'd be great. So I went on a show. We talked about it. And the guy who was supposedly everyone thought had done this was there. And I told Dr. this guy didn't do this. And he's, what? It's like, this guy didn't do this. I'm telling you. He didn't do it.
Mm.
He didn't do it. And so he and I became friends. Dr. Phil, great guy. You'd love him.
Yes.
Got to intro you guys. From there, so I was on his show two or three more times after that. He said, we should probably get in another one of the guys. And so I brought in, I think, Greg first, and then Chase and Mark, and we would all, and then a couple of us at a time, and then we brought everybody in at the same time. And went through. I think that's how that went down, if I remember correctly. So I was there several times by myself. And finally he said, I think you should have a TV show. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start this new network, and let's talk about that. And I was like, yeah, okay, great. Got the other guys and said, we think about this. We're like, yeah. So we started that. We've shot 53 episodes for the first season, and they're all in the can. And I think our show, his network is up now, but I'm not sure when our show starts.
Okay.
Shouldn't be long.
And do you enjoy television? You probably never thought you'd be doing this. But
you're used to all this. It's simple for you.
Right.
But it took a minute to get used to because you can't say everything. You and I had that discussion. You can't say everything you want to say, because somebody goes, that's the guy that did that? I remember him now. So you have to kind of watch what you do and say because we can't come on there and give our full past because you'll start getting looked up and then because we're on TV.
Right.
So you got to, you have to watch what you say. you know, because three of us were interrogators, and then one is Mark Bowden's a body language presentation guy, and it's just it takes a minute to get used to, because you've got a guy coming in, he's going, now do this, and you're like, we don't do that, you know.
Yeah.
We got so many views, and I think Dr. Phil likes it because we act like this,
right?
You know, and not like, well, I believe that the none of that. It's right. More personality driven.
Right.
So you feel like you're hanging around with us instead of listening to us teach you something. You
know? Well, something made me think, because I was thinking about what I wanted to ask you on the way into Nashville this morning, and something told me to ask you, what's your philosophy and beliefs about money? Meaning, you know, I'm a business coach.
Yeah.
I just finished building this building. Pretty significant expense.
Sure.
the way my brain thinks, one of my coaches once said, you'd be a better husband to your wife if there was some type of monetary exchange, because the way your brain thinks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, my love language is revenue. Mm-hmm. But I was a basketball coach. I never thought about money, right? But then I started a business. I'm like, well, I need to grow. I need to generate revenue. And most people hire me because they want to generate more money.
Yeah.
Right? They're here because they want to figure out tactics, strategies, how to get more out of their people as a coach. What has been – because you were at the Entrepreneur Center.
Mm-hmm.
You were people who had no money trying to go find money.
Right.
Right. What is your basic belief and philosophy about that? Has it just followed you because you had a skill set? Do you wake up and ever think about it? Have you ever thought about it? Because you and I have never had these talks. Mm-hmm. And something this morning said, ask him what his thoughts are about money.
Okay. Well, I think you should collect as much of it as you possibly can, number one. No, I think... with a lot of that comes a big responsibility when you have a lot of money. You have to. Yep. You can't say, I've won the billion-dollar lottery, and you start giving everybody $1,000 or anything. You can't do that stuff. So being raised the way I was by my father, who was a doctor, and he did very well, and seeing how you handle those situations and how you do that, you have to have respect for it.
Yes.
You know? And at the same time, it's never been a huge concern for me. Not that it was because I didn't need any, because when you're a musician, you don't have any money at all.
Right.
You know, we were poor musicians. But you have to respect business. You have to look at it and go, okay, it's like this. If I do this, this is going to happen. If I don't do this, if I don't respect people, if they can't trust what I say, mm-hmm. I'll get away with it for a while, and I may make a lot of money. But there are going to be people who don't like you at all, who hate you, and every time your name comes up, they're going to spit.
Yep.
So I never wanted to be that guy at all, not even a little bit.
Yep.
So I was always very careful in dealing with in business situations. At the Entrepreneur Center, I decided, there's a guy named Chris Blands, I think you've met Chris, and he called up and said, hey, there's this thing called the Entrepreneur Center here in town. We should, you know, I'm thinking about trying to get in there. I said, gee, if you got an idea, or if we can come up with an idea, I can get us in. I said, I can show us how to pitch the idea. And I learned how to pitch from pitching bands to labels.
Yeah.
That's where I learned how to do that. So we had an idea, and so I said, we'll get in. We got in, and they give you like $5,000 or something, you know, adorable. And you're supposed to build your business that's supposed to help you do it. But you go there every day. And I was there about 2 weeks. And Michael Burch, the CEO, came up and he goes, hey, what are you doing here? And I said, oh, I'm learning how to do, you know, for our business, to be entrepreneurs. He said, that's not why you're here. I said, yes. I said, obviously, why would I be here? He said, I don't know. That's why I'm asking. Yeah, I said, I'm fascinated with people. I want to see how they pitch. I want to do that. And if anybody needs any advice, maybe I can help with it. 2 weeks after that, he goes, all right, you're the entrepreneur. I want you to be the entrepreneur in residence. I said, I don't know much about that. He said, don't give me that. He can call people fairly quickly.
Yes.
So I know you can do it. That's what I'd like to do. I want you to be, here's your parking thing and all that. And so I agreed to do it. So that's where I got into teaching people how to pitch, but at the same time, teaching them how to have respect for what they're doing. If the person had an idea and I didn't think that person was a good person or had motives that weren't going to go in the right way, I wouldn't deal with them. I wouldn't help them.
Yep.
And he would ask me why. And I'd say, I'm not so sure about this person. Excuse me, because I don't know. I don't know where they're going. I wouldn't want someone in my family to invest in them. I wouldn't want one of my friends to invest in them. I wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't do things that I thought I would get into that. I wouldn't mind telling my brother that or my best friend that about that to get into it. So I think the honesty part of it and being clean as a person, being a good person and money, when they go together, that's when powerful things happen. Yeah. That's when if you're good, and I don't know if you get on to religion here or not.
Right.
But just so you know, Jesus loves you, but I'm his favorite.
Yeah.
So you get that straight. And I think once, if you can parallel being a good person and the responsibility of having having financial goals, I think that works out. I'm not saying, listen, you know, pray a lot. And God's a genie and you'll make it. That's not at all. But I think if you have respect for that and you're a good person, after a while, that's going to work out for you the best, I think. So my views on that overall are be the best person you can with the amount of money you can collect.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because when you're coaching those people, they've got an idea, they've got a business, but what you're really doing is bring a higher probability that they will get funded.
Yeah.
And how many people don't do that?
Right.
So there's always arguments right now. There's a lot of people who bash coaches. There's probably 800,000 people in the United States that call themselves a coach. There's really no barrier to entry. The average income of those coaches is roughly $47,000. So what people start doing is generalizing that all coaches are not that good, right? Well, that's really not true. What you did for those people, it was coach them and how to make a better pitch, which drove up the probability they would get money.
Right.
And if they were coachable, right, and you came in and did that, and is that something you still do? You still coach people who are raising capital? Is that something you enjoy doing?
I do. Okay. I do because I feel like it's – even if it's a hospital – you know, say they need a new wing for something, but here's what we're going to pitch to these people who, in other words, that finance this. I train them how to do that. So they'll have that cancer center. So they'll have the whatever it is they need. I love doing that, especially the big money stuff, because I go in with the basics. I don't go into their numbers and all that. There's guys that take care of that. My thing is showing you how to do this once you have that information.
Right.
I still love it. I love helping a new entrepreneur too. Oh, as you know, there's nothing, there's no buzz. That's like getting somebody who has not a lot of money but an idea and just going, here's what you do. And they go, okay, now what? Here's what you do. And they go, okay. Yep. And they learn how to do that, finesse it, and then their idea happens. Oh, it's such a rush seeing. Like now, walking in here today.
Yeah.
After we talked about this, your idea years ago, I'm still buzzed from walking in here.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, when you think about it, I'm reading a book called Slicing the Pie by Mike Moyer. He says that about 70% of equity deals turn out to be bad deals. Somebody feels like they're getting screwed.
Yeah.
And what he makes an argument for in that book is that there's no you go into it with no real quantifiable data. The one thing that's for sure is things are going to change. It's going to be organic versus static.
Yep.
So we do a business deal and I say you get 70 and I get 30 or vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. And we start on the front end. And then we go down this path, and then at some point we go, well, dang, man, not everybody's carrying their weight here, and I'm contributing this. And what he's trying to do in that book, which I find pretty fascinating, is like a piece of pie that every piece has a quantifiable contribution, but it's more of a dynamic thing. And he uses the example of you and I playing blackjack in Vegas, and we both have a dollar. We say we're going to split the proceeds 50-50. The dealer lays down two aces, and we go, well, we need to split that, right? And I need two more dollars, and you're going to put in two, and I'm going to put in two. And you go, no, I don't have to. I only have the one. And I put in two.
Right.
And then we win.
Right.
And he says, well, should you split that 50-50 because you agreed on it up the front, or should it be 75-25 because I put in two and you put in one? And so he tries to tackle this big thing, and I'm going somewhere with this with you because you've coached a lot of people on equity deals. At some point, I'll get into raising capital. Is that a reason a lot of people don't get into these deals because they're afraid we're going to get screwed on the back end? Or what have you seen there?
There are a lot of cons in that.
Yes.
So that's usually when I get called in for my other skill set, from the perspective of that. Who am I dealing with here? So quite often, there's a fellow you and I know, and what would happen is he would say, I'm going to meet with these people. I need to know what I'm dealing with here.
Yes.
Will you come in and watch? So I would watch, and we'd have little signals. I'd have it's the same thing in interrogation. You put your hands on your knees, and you one tap like that means something. You lift one finger, it means something else. You lift your pinky finger, it means something. Ask this, ask that. So as we go down, as the meeting would go on, I'd lift that one finger. Then he would know to ask a specific question, and I could pretty much tell you whether this person was there for the right reasons or the wrong reasons, or if they were who they say they were. Because I'm always introduced, I do these for VCs, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
So I have to wear different clothes than this, go in there and sit there and act like I work for them. They give me a dollar, so I get paid to work there. What do you do? I work here. I get paid to do So I always say, I get paid to do this, that, and the other thing, which is what I'm here doing.
Right.
Although I did say, let me take trash out for you. I do everything from taking out the trash to, so I'm not lying when I'm doing that, because I get all kinds of iffy and jumpy when I start saying something.
Sure.
So, but I'm there to find out what kind of person that is.
Yeah.
So that's, and that's one of my favorite things as well, to help them make those decisions. But I think a lot of people are just afraid to get in because they don't know. These days, it's hard to tell who you're dealing with.
Sure. And, you know, my wife said one day, you're just not very good. The amount of money that I've personally lost in bad deals, bad partners, just it's not a few $100,000. I mean, it's a significant amount of money. You see where I'm going?
Yeah.
And it's like, why didn't we learn this lesson? Why didn't we know this? The other place is I'm surprised that, you know, in today's world, it seems like a lot of people struggle to hire people. Right. So they're maybe not good at hiring people.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about taking your skill set to that arena?
I do that.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about that, because people come to us all the time and say, well, I need to hire these people. Now there's all these recruiters that are out there. We actually coach some of these recruiters.
Yeah.
Right. And now it's like this whole business of, hey, I need five people, and they go get these people.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what they've done from a psychological standpoint. Do they match it up? Are they doing testing? Could you work with this entrepreneur? You know, tell me a little bit about what you do in those situations.
Well, I train the things. Some of the things we're going to look at today when we have it, we're going to have a little thing after this little training session. And it's making sure that person is who they say they are. You can put on a good show, and if it doesn't last very long.
Yes.
You know, and a good con, quite often neurologically, they're not sound. So there'll be a couple things wrong in there. So it's tough to see through.
Yes.
But once you talk to someone for a while, you don't ask them, well, what do you think about so-and-so? Well, how do you do this? What do you think about that? It's the little things you ask. It's the little tactics you use to get into that person's personality to see what you're really dealing with. Everything from spilling something to they'll ask if they want something and not bringing it to them.
Yes.
And then pretend you forgot it, to do all kinds of things. So you can tell, and that may seem like, oh, that sounds the goofiest thing in the world. But you can find a lot out about someone when you might make them uncomfortable. Even the tiniest bit of discomfort can show you a lot about somebody. So the key in deciding who you're going to hire, a lot of it is the questions, how you ask the question, how they answer the question, what the answer is, obviously, because that's your main source of information. But it's the way they answer it and the way they their approach to you when you first get there. Are they too smiley? Are they too happy to see you? What are they doing when they don't know you're watching them? You know, so well, I was talking to Mike earlier when I first got here. And so now, and I can tell, I said, I don't want to be offended because I do this with everybody. When I go somewhere, as soon as I'm pulling up, I want to make sure I know what's going on. And I saw him outside.
Yep.
And he was checking everything because he was looking for me.
Yep.
And he's looking around, and he's on all the time. So he was scanning, looking around. There are things you can do to make people so you don't stand out. Not that you can't be seen or you're invisible. Make it look like you're doing something else.
Right.
And so he missed that. So I said, okay, well, this guy hasn't been trained like I've been trained.
Right.
Because I couldn't decide, was this guy a cop once? Was he a security guy? What's going on? Why is he doing that? So once I got through all that and got to talking to him, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. I see exactly what's happening. Because he asked me, well, what do you think? And I said, well, don't hurt your feelings, but here's what I saw.
Yep, like that's good.
So it's those kind of things. You can tell a lot about somebody in the first few minutes you meet them, but sometimes it takes a while to see the entire picture. So asking the right questions, understanding the question, the answers you're hearing and seeing, that's important.
Well, I was watching an interview with one of the founders of KKR, and because I've been studying private equity and all those things just because I'm interested in it.
Yeah.
And just learning, really. I'm just learning. And I'm doing some stuff with a guy named Adam Coffey that, you know, has like $3.1 billion of exits, 58 companies, worked under Jack Welch. Yeah. So it kind of got me interested to study it. And so I'm listening to all these interviews. And he said when he did an interview, if the person put salt on their meal before they tasted it, he never hired them.
Oh.
And this was his thought. He said because they're not open-minded. They've already made up their mind that it doesn't taste what. So I remember Jim Ayers, you know, the Jim Ayers at First Bank. I was a consultant for that company for 8 or 9 years. And Jim Ayers would come in the morning. They tell me, I never saw this personally, and he would do an interview early in the morning. He would get there before them. They would come in, and he would say, I got to go to the bathroom. And he would sit the Wall Street Journal down across from them. And if they were reading anything other than business when he came back, he didn't hire them.
Oh.
If they were reading the business section, he hired him. If they're reading sports, he goes, not a business dude. So it's interesting. Like people have these things that, but when in coaching, The reason I'm resonating with what you're saying is because in coaching, we did a lot of what I would call advanced maturation techniques. I call it advanced maturity. We would put the players through testing,
yeah,
role play, simulation, put them in environments where they were uncomfortable. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they had to work their way through it. Now, what I did from 99 to 08, you probably couldn't do today.
Oh, yeah.
because I mean, just kids are not as tough as they were then. But I said, if I need to get this freshman to play like a junior, the only way to speed up her cycle of growth is to put her through adversity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
To help her figure it out. So let's talk about, we got a few minutes left and you're doing a thing for me here today with my exchange members, which is our high-level networking group, and you're going to do spies and lies in the boardroom, which I'm excited about hearing.
Okay.
Let's talk about the interrogation side of this, because that is a big role. People bring you in to do interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
For what reasons?
All kinds. There could be... one of my favorites to do is the con, finding it for banks, financial things. If, for example, you had somebody here, or you were missing something, money, whatever it is, I like to get to talk to those people. If someone's committed, my background is mostly in crime, so it's a lot of financial crime. My favorite thing is banks and financial, because I don't know a lot of, I can't do the, analytically, I have problems adding. I'm dyslexic as you can possibly be. But I can still talk to them about that, but feign ignorance enough to get them to tell me more than they should.
Yep.
It's just a whole game, and I absolutely love doing that. There are other facets that I'm into that I do, but it's those are my favorites. Or finding the person, or it could be somebody, a bank teller, for example, somebody comes through and they deposit cash. And the teller says, okay, she takes the cash, or he, and takes out $10,000 of the $50,000. And they say, okay, you only got $40,000 to put in. And the person comes up, all this money's missing. They don't know where it's gone, but she's been taking it. Somehow has figured out how to do it. And so getting that person to tell me what they did that they shouldn't have done, I love that.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it.
And there's probably no shortage of work for you, is there?
I'm really busy.
it's like you're in a business because there's so many crazy things that happen in the world. I mean, if you've just been an entrepreneur for a number of years, you probably had some of these things happen to you.
Oh, yeah.
I know I've had some of these things happen to me that just, it's like,
oh,
I can't, like, did that really happen? Like, did those people really do that?
Some of the things at the Entrepreneur Center that came through, flipping cons out of there, that was one of my favorite things to do was spotting it. Or people would come to me and say, this guy's like, what's going on? Why does this look on your face? They'd be sitting there thinking, I'm dealing with a guy who's going to invest in this and this, this and this. And we figure out that guy was getting ready to snatch their IP. Mm-hmm. Or figure out this person was getting ready to do something else.
Yes.
That kind of thing. Those high-end things where they think they're outsmarting everybody, those are my favorites to get as well. I love that.
Well, I think, you know, you got a very fascinating skill set. You got a TV show out. What is the TV show called?
The Behavior Panel.
The Behavior Panel, and that'll be on what network?
Merritt Street Media.
Okay, and that's Dr. Phil?
Yeah, it's Dr. Phil's new network.
One thing about Dr. Phil that people would find fascinating, what have you found just by dealing with him personally? Seems like just a Texas straight-talking
dude. You nailed it. Once you, my first 15 minutes with him, because I was like, what's going to happen? It was the same guy as on TV. There's no messing around with him. He's funny. You don't see a lot of him being funny. You do a little bit. But it's just you're seeing that guy. No wavering. He's not some guy on TV and then he gets out there and he's somebody else. That's the guy you're seeing.
Yeah.
Is the guy on TV. You love him. I want to connect you guys.
When I was a young basketball coach, we had Dr. Phil Thursdays.
Oh.
I would take clips because he did a lot on, you know, psychology, did a lot on depression, a lot on things. Back in those days, this was a period where he was on every day doing these things. This was in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I would take those clips, and on Thursdays, I would show it to my high school players, and they loved it because he would teach them tips and strategies. And so we called him Dr. Phil Thursdays.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that cool?
Wow,
This is back in, I don't know, 07, 06, 07, 08, but it was really valuable for my players to grow them because – I tried to expose them to successful people all the time, and we had life after basketball and leadership academies and all those type of things.
Wow, that's awesome.
Well, I could spend maybe the next time you're here at the Greatness Factor and we have a lot of time, I bet we could go for hours, man.
Oh, yeah.
I got so many questions to ask you
all right.
just about interesting things, and I'm thinking about people that I need to introduce you to that you can tell me if they're legit or not.
Okay. I'm in. Let me know.
And then tell us about the course, because I think everybody should get the course. Where's the course at?
It's at bodylanguagetactics.com.
Yep.
And we walk you through the basics of body language all the way up to some. We don't get really into the hardcore stuff nobody's interested in. It's every person that is even semi-interested in body language will learn so much, because most of the information you have about body language is incorrect or incomplete.
I bet. And that will give you an advantage in the world.
Oh,
like that's a thing that'll give you an advantage.
That's what we hear the most.
Wow.
That's what we hear the most.
Well, Scott Rouse, thank you for coming to do this for me today. Thank you for working with my group that we have coming in today called The Exchange. And I look forward to your TV show.
Thank you very much.
And thank you. And I remember where we were at. We were downstairs at the 505 3 years ago, talking about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
And longer than that, years and years ago.
Years and years ago.
Talking about the idea of
this. I know.
You know.
Yeah. I call that long obedience in the same direction.
Yeah.
And it's just will that puppy just keep going until we make it happen.
You did.
So
here we are.
Thank you for your support.
You're welcome.
I appreciate you, brother, and thank you for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Guys, this is Coach Michael Burt, Person of Expansion, brand new podcast I have out where I interview really, really interesting people. I'd love to spend hours with Scott. We've got a session we're about to do here called The Exchange, where we're going to get into his presentation, Spies and Lies in the Boardroom. So if people did want to reach out to you to do something with you, because we coach a lot of entrepreneurs, where do they need to go for that?
ScottRouse.com.
Easy. Easy peasy, folks. I'm Coach Burt, Level 10 Studios here at the Greatness Factory, Person of Expansion. Thank you for watching, and thank you for listening.
So it's a lot of financial crime. My favorite thing is banks and financial, because I don't know a lot of, I can't do the, analytically, I have problems.